Welcome to Whiskey Wednesdays, where we drink the finest whiskey, and we argue about the internet's most important topics.
Because if there's anything that the internet doesn't love more, it's arguing and telling people that they're wrong.
We may not agree with the side that we've taken, but I'll tell you what, we're gonna die on this hill.
So grab something to drink, maybe a whiskey, sit back, and enjoy. If you're listening to the podcast, thank you so much for listening. We would really appreciate if you would hit the subscribe and share this podcast with somebody else and leave a review. That's how we're going to take this thing from the three of you listening to maybe three dozen.
Yeah, three dozen.
All right. Today, we are going to be enjoying something fairly new to us.
I'm excited.
This is a James Pepper 1776. And this is actually kind of an interesting find. It was kind of like middle shelf and kind of snuck in with some other things. And really what stuck out to me, being a freedom-loving gun owner, is a 1776, you know.
Heck yeah, America.
I love America. So I asked the guy at the liquor store if he'd had it. He hadn't at that time. And so I told him I would report back. So this is for you. So why don't you go ahead and pour a little bit while I tell you a little bit about it. So this James Pepper is actually the oldest distiller in Kentucky.
What?
OG distiller from, it was actually established during the American Revolution, hence 1776. And he actually ended up establishing himself in 1780. So this is, I mean, the birth of America is when the original mash bill was created and started distilling this. Colonel James Pepper would then brand a 1776, since that's when it was, since that's kind of when all this stuff started happening. The brands went through some highs and lows. Actually, if you go to their website, they have like a 10-minute long video. It's actually pretty fascinating to see kind of the history of where it started, ebbs and flows, you know, getting through several closures and reopening. And actually, one of the things that I thought was interesting is one of the original distilleries was bought by Woodford. So Woodford Reserve is actually in the original Pepper distillery.
Wow.
So I thought that was kind of neat.
That's pretty cool.
Another thing that I thought was interesting is the recipe for an old fashioned is actually credited to James Pepper. We love old fashions. When we go anywhere, it's usually old fashions.
That's a drink of choice right there.
That's what I make most of the time if I'm not drinking neat.
Yeah.
And I'd actually always wondered, you know, where that came from. So
we talked about it once.
So now we know. Very into bourbons and stuff. You'll recognize the name James E. Taylor. Taylor bourbon is one of the most sought after these days. Taylor was actually one of James E. Pepper's mentors.
Wow.
and helped with the loan and really got the brand started. So the distillery would then close and be abandoned for about 50 years. And then this guy found it and is kind of a history buff and started digging more in and brought the brand back in 2012. So it's been about 10 years.
It's a long time to be closed to come back.
It is, yeah. Yeah. So for 50 years, it was locked up. He actually found this. It was kind of interesting. He found the original recipes for the mash bill, found drawings for the original distillery, and they recreated everything to a T.
That's so cool.
They actually used the same well that the water was drawn by back then.
That's so cool.
So what we're drinking today is, as far as we know, exactly like what they were drinking.
They made a big effort
at
to make it
the birth of America.
Way. Yeah.
So I thought that was super fascinating.
Juice right here.
Let's taste this a little bit, and I'll tell you a little more about.
Okay. Smells nice.
Yeah. So it's 100 proof. This has been aged 3 to 4 years.
Dude, I love this one.
Some of the notes that they gave were sweet, rye, spice, vanilla, honey, cloves, chocolate. A lot of those things.
Basic.
That's yeah. Most people say that's what it is because again, you have the same ingredients. It's just different. You know,
oak small sticks changes out in there. Pretty strong.
Yeah,
I like that a lot.
I like the. I definitely get vanilla. The one thing I'll say about this is there is a aftertaste, and it's not immediately after.
Mm-hmm.
But when I drink this, and I'm done, I notice like 15 to 30 minutes later, I have this kind of it's almost like a bitter taste in the back of my tongue. That I'm not a huge fan of, but I can deal with it because when you're actually
interesting, because I did not have that experience.
You notice that?
No, I'm gonna probably notice it now because you brought it up. I like how smooth this drink is for 100 proof.
Yeah, for 100 proof.
Drinks like an 80 proof.
It is actually very, very good.
It's really smooth.
So this has actually won 5 gold awards since 2013.
I can see it.
And yeah, I think for a pretty budget friendly, I want to say I paid like $25 or something like that.
Yeah.
So pretty budget friendly. I think it's actually really good. I put this on my I would buy again list. So that, again, that's kind of how I judge things. Would I buy it again or not?
8.5 out of 10.
Wow.
I know. Still, because we've had this before, and I gave it that rating last time.
Yeah.
I really do like this a lot. It's smooth, strong, oaky. I love oaky. That's my go-to flavor for
oak and vanilla.
Yeah.
Are definitely things I really enjoy about bourbon. One of the other things that was interesting about James E. Pepper that I learned is that he was instrumental in the BIB Act, which Bottle and Bond Act, and we talked about Bottle and Bond before, which I thought was interesting. And he's also a strong opponent of the Whiskey Trust. So how it used to be is that they could only sell by the barrel. And the problem is when you sell by the barrel, it's really easy to mess with recipes and to just to mess with it. So he was an opponent of that and fought for being able to bottle himself. So that way he can bottle it, and he was actually one of the first people to put like a label over the top of the of the cork so they could tell if it had been tampered with or not. So yeah, I mean he really pioneered a lot.
The bottle and bond
of the industry. He worked with a lot of people who are some of the biggest names in the industry for a long time. There's current current distillers like Woodford there's a long tenured history of Colonel James E. Pepper in that industry. So I don't really have a tie-in for this. You do?
Yes, I absolutely do. Right,
do you need a stretch? Is this going to be, you can hurt yourself?
So in the same way that Bottle and Bond helped whiskey connoisseurs back in the day understand if whiskey companies were up to nefarious deeds or not, concealed carry licensing is meant to do the exact same thing in the firearms world. So obviously we're going
to
talk about concealed carry license today.
I disagree with that because that's one of the dumbest things you've said.
It's not the dumbest things I've said.
No, you said far dumber things.
Far dumber things. Let's be honest.
You say really dumb things all the time.
All the time. Like, on the weekly.
There's no way I could even begin to rank
all
the dumb things that you say.
You could rank it. On a scale of 1 to Dusty,
I don't have enough time in my life to try to rank all the dumb things that you say.
So, today we're talking about concealed carrying. Greg is against concealed carry license, and I'm for concealed carry license. And we kind of wanted to talk about a few things here. You had some. I have some definitions, and Greg has some.
Well, you had some history.
So when
we sat down and started digging into this and coming up with our defending our sides, one of the questions we asked is, how did concealed carry even begin? What was because as far as we know, back then, way back when, everybody just carried guns. It was a Wild West, and everybody just did what they want. So
come with me on this journey.
How do we get to this point, Dusty?
Right? It's early 1800s, 1813 era, right? Top hats are in style. You know, we got the waistcoats looking good. And also, carrying a gun is completely and perfectly acceptable. Not only that, it's also pretty normal. In fact, it's expected of you, right? The times are early America. Most of the world's not even developed at this point. or most of America is not even developed at this point. And there's wild animals. There's people looking to raid their wagons. Like, this is a time of the Wild West. And so carrying a gun out in the open was perfectly acceptable. You know what was not perfectly acceptable, Greg?
What?
Concealing a gun. Isn't that pretty interesting? So the states and the law enforcement had decided that people who concealed their guns were up to no good, right? Wasn't to take away your rights or anything like that. It was simply, you should have a gun on you. And if you're trying to hide that gun from us, what are you up to? Something nefarious is going on here. So the states got together, only a few of them in 1813, and then a few more in 1859, which is quite a big gap. So over that range, they decided that people who were concealing their guns are up to no good. This is a blanket statement, and they are going to make laws to make it so that concealing your gun is up to no good. Now, when a law enforcement officer pulls over somebody and they find a concealed weapon, they know this person was doing this to be up to no good. So fast forward, the mid-1900s, and concealing your gun isn't allowed, but carrying out in the open and in public is kind of taboo at this point. You know, the world has developed a lot more, the United States has developed a lot more, and there's no longer a massive chance of dying from a bear attack or a mountain lion or somebody trying to steal the goods from your carts. And people just got out of style of carrying a gun, right? It's been a long time since we had to fight for our independence, and we just got out of style. So it's now kind of weird to carry a gun out in the open, and it's one of those fuddy moves, right? Like, that's not a word they'd probably use back then. It's the word we use now. So it's a fuddy move to carry a gun out in the open, but people want to defend themselves. So how do they do it? Well, the states were like, we should issue a license or of such that tells a police officer that you are a law-abiding citizen because you've taken the time to go through our steps to conceal a gun. And so now, when you get pulled over and they find a concealed weapon and you have a concealed weapon permit or a concealed carry permit, they're like, this is a law-abiding citizen. I have no reason to be suspicious of this firearm. And that is kind of the history of how concealed carry licenses came to be.
Interesting.
It's pretty interesting.
We'll get more into maybe some of our thoughts on...
Greg seems skeptical.
On if that's right or wrong and that sort of thing. We'll get into that. So I wanted to go through some terminology.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
That's out there, just so we have a basic understanding. There are states that are shall issue and may issue.
Mm.
Shall issue states, they have a set of rules that you need to meet, a set of standards that you have to meet. When you meet those standards, they shall issue you your license.
Okay.
It's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Okay, you've checked off everything. The state says okay. Then there are may issue states. These are states like California, Illinois, that they also have a list of rules that you need to adhere to. And when you file your application, they may give you your license. They may not. And this is one way. We have friends in California that have waited years to hear back on if they're going to get it or not.
Let alone states.
Imagine waiting years and then say no, and then you have to refile or something, and they have to wait years again. It's a way for states to basically say no without saying that we're an anti-gun state. They can say no, we have licensing. We just may or may not give it to you.
You know what's worse than being anti-gun? Pretending to be pro-gun, but then being anti-gun.
Yeah, that is worse.
Disguised anti-gun.
Come out with it.
That's right. Don't be on the fence. As Ron Swanson would say, know what you're about, son.
All right, let's talk about constitutional carry and permitless carry, because there are states that have these. So I'm just going to read this definition for you, so I don't want to mess it up, because it can be hard to differentiate these. Constitutional carry means that the state's law does not prohibit citizens who can legally possess a firearm from carrying handguns. Thus, no state permit is required. Sometimes constitutional carry may be conditional, such as in those states that have no laws prohibiting the open carry of a handgun, but which require a permit to carry the handgun concealed.
Right.
Okay. Permitless carry includes constitutional carry states, as well as states where an individual must meet certain qualifications. Some states are fully unrestricted, meaning no permit is required for open or concealed carry. Others allow the open carry of a firearm or handgun without a permit, but require a permit for concealment. All right, so there's...
Pretty interesting, yeah.
Yeah, there's some shades of a difference there.
A lot of terminology going on.
There is. I thought also share, there are 21 states that are permitless and 29 states that are permit required. Some of the last stats that I could find, in 2016, there were 14.5 million concealed carry license holders. I can only think that number has blown up exponentially since 2016. With everything that's gone on, just in the country in the last couple of years, let alone since 2016. So that number has to be...
Didn't we have over a million new gun owners in 2020? Something like that?
It's like every year that we're adding... Yeah,
it's crazy.
We're adding huge numbers of gun owners. The National Firearms Survey. Do you want to take a guess of how many... I can't remember what year this was from, and I didn't write it down, so I apologize. So let's just... We'll say of that 14.5 million, do you want to guess how many of those people actually carry every single day?
Three million. Okay. Yeah.
So... Close. And then there are some other stats about if they carry weekly, monthly, what all that stuff. But
yeah.
I really thought it was interesting. The people of 14.5 million, people that actually make a point to change their lifestyle so that they carry a gun every single day. And maybe, again, lifestyle is a part of this equation. Maybe where you work, where you worship, all those things. Maybe the places that you normally go to don't allow it. It's hard to carry every day if the
Sometimes,
places that you go that you depend to make your living, don't like your freedom.
Yeah, that's a conscience-defiant choice right there. So that's tough for everyone to make.
So let me see if there's anything else I want to share.
Yeah, so before we get into like a debate going on here, you'd asked me before to define what concealed carry is and what we're talking about here in this conversation. And so we've decided that the act of lawful gun ownership and carrying a gun in public without the public knowing that you have a gun is concealed carry, right? So I have, that's exactly what I have.
Yeah, so we are, in this discussion, we are talking about law-abiding
citizens.
Citizens.
Carrying a gun in public without the public having the knowledge of that gun. Yeah. That would be concealed carrying in our eyes here.
Yep.
There are other states that say stuff like pepper spray and that kind of thing. We're not talking about that. Just guns.
Right. Okay, so let's get into this. I'm taking the side of, I think there should be no concealed carry licensing at all.
Okay.
This is, our country should just be, if you want to carry a gun, you should be able to carry a gun. Our Second Amendment guarantees the rightful...
Gun owner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should be able to own a gun. If you can own a gun, you should be able to carry a gun.
And I'm taking the side that having concealed carry licenses within our society adds to the society overall benefits.
So one of the things that we were really hoping to do when we sat down to work on this, I was really hoping to be able to back up my side with stats. I think stats are important and can help prove points and you were trying to do the same thing. The more that we really dug in to try to find stats, the more we realized how difficult it is to back either side with stats, because it is impossible to find unbiased stats. We would find a study, and it would be done by, we would find a study, and that study would be done by the NRA, or it would be done by Mothers Against...
Right. Yeah.
You know, like,
clearly biased.
It was really hard to find anything, and of course every study is, this is an unbiased study.
Yeah.
But it was really hard to find stats. So unfortunately, we're not really going to be able to go into this conversation with a bunch of numbers saying, see, because of this is 60% more than that.
Yeah. 45% of the
We're going to be going through a lot more kind of logical.
Our logic.
Thought process through this. And I can't really think of anything that could possibly go wrong with following our logic.
No. Our logic is flawless.
Flawless.
No, we get calls all the time. Presidents like, hey, what do you guys think about this? Yeah. We just tell them what we think and we move on.
Like, duh.
Yeah. So, yeah. All right. So, listen here, peeps. With this logic, I have a few things to say. I think that we have to, now that you know the history of how concealed carry kind of came to be, many of my points kind of ride along that as a good thing for society. So the addition of concealed carry licensing, I want to first kind of point out that it doesn't restrict your rights. So you have the right to carry a gun anytime, any place, but it needs to be out in the open, right? Some states don't allow you to do that. Those states are wrong. So I'm not arguing whether or not you should be able to open carry. That's not what this debate's about. What this debate's about is should be able to conceal carry. Well, I believe that you have the right to carry a gun anytime, any place, but I think that others have the right to know about it. So part of my, or at least know that you're law abiding, right? So part of my issue with not having concealed carry licensing is concealing a gun is a naturally nefarious deed for people who are naturally nefarious. So if you're gonna rob a bank, you're not gonna walk in with an open carry, guns on your holster, on your hip, because you're gonna draw attention in today's world. So you're gonna conceal this. But when you get pulled over for a traffic stop, right, one of the ways that I believe that law enforcement officers can really prevent kind of defensive, if you will, enforcement is if they have ways to catch bad people doing bad things before they do bad things. And one of those ways can be concealing a gun. But if you've got a concealed carry license, because you've taken the little bit of effort that it is to follow the laws and get your license, now when they pull you over and you have a concealed gun, they're just like, oh, you have a permit for that? And you're like, yes, I do. Here you go. And all of a sudden, they can kind of write you off as being a bad person.
Or at least my permit, the Constitution.
Okay, you know, I'll give you that. So they can write you off as being a terrible person up to no good, right? Because you've taken the time to be a law-abiding citizen, first, they assume that you're going to continue to do that in the past. So past performance is predictive of future performance. And sometimes, like, people get off on this train of, you know, you're restricting people's rights. You should be able to put that gun wherever you want to. And the reality of our world is that we live in a society of people who have to co-mingle and get along. And not everyone is up to good intentions, right? So it is almost a benefit for everyone in society, including those who want to carry guns, to have the ability to know that people who are legally concealed carrying are doing so because they're up to good intentions and they wish to protect the general public or themselves from other bad people. And so when a law enforcement officer pulls you over, that is what he will know if you have a concealed carry license. So that's my first point. I want to gather my second point real quick. Oh, yes. Okay. So my second point has to do with knowledge, right? If you're going to carry a gun, I think you should understand everything there is to know about the gun. But at the very minimum, you should at least know what the rules, laws, and regulations are, and should have some idea of what the consequences are to using lethal force or to breaking those rules, laws, and regulations. Concealed carry license gives gun owners the opportunity to learn about that without having to pay a ton of money. They can just go get their concealed carry license, and they understand that. It also gives them a really basic grasp of how firearms work, you know, general how to make sure you can shoot in this general area. For most states, it's not like terribly tough and in-depth training. And I don't think it should be, because this isn't, concealed carry licenses aren't a license that you're an expert marksman. They are a license that you are a law-abiding citizen. My third point kind of goes to the aspect of like, well, concealed carry licenses give the government more control over who can have a gun. And we've already talked about that you need to be a law-abiding citizen and able to own a gun to get a concealed carry license. But you need to do that to own a gun in the first place. So really what I want to point out here is that the government isn't training you. It's not like you're going to go to your local congressman and he's going to host a class and train you. these are your neighbors, these are your friends, and these are the people, you know, I think they're mostly NRA instructors, right? These are the people who are in your city who are trying to teach you about firearms. And they will say, hey, I've given this person the legal training that they need to have that the state says they should have, and I've given them the firearms handling skills that the state says they should have in order to be able to get one of these. And as that, you know, it's your neighbor trying to do this, and it's not just the government. I think those are the main points that I have here.
The more you talk, the more angry I got.
Well, I'm glad you got angry. Let's see what you say.
All right. I'm going to get into my points here of why there should not be a concealed carry license at all. I'm going to start with the word freedom.
Okay.
We live in a country birthed upon freedom and tyranny against a government that was trying to take the guns away from its people.
Okay.
We turned into a society where we try to take the guns away from its own citizens. And one of the ways we do that is through concealed carry licensing. We're allowing some states to be may, what is it?
Issue.
May issue.
Yeah.
And when some states are shall issue, and most of the states that are may issue don't actually issue anything. They actually just waste your time and money. So it becomes a barrier to freedom. Licensing is a barrier to freedom. And just like the government loves to do, they love to take your rights away and then sell it back to you. Like, oh, you can't have this freedom until we've approved this freedom for you. And it just turns out that that's going to cost you something. And we're going to, so it's a barrier to freedom.
Barrier to freedom.
And one of the things that then come off of that is there's delays in approval can be problematic for people. We hear stories all the time about some woman who her ex-husband beats her and she gets like arrest warrant form or something like that. She's trying to get a gun to protect herself. Now she has to wait for the state to approve her to be able to protect herself because she's not allowed to own a gun or carry a gun in that state that she's in. And then, sadly, a lot of times we're hearing these stories, she ends up getting beat and killed anyway. All because the state wants to make sure that she's a law-abiding citizen. To kind of counter your point.
Interesting.
And then one of the last things I have is it's being future-proof. So we talked about the past and how this started. It started out with, I disagree with it, but good intentions on trying to differentiate between good guys and bad guys. Apparently, if you have freedom to carry a gun, but you're not licensed to carry a gun, now you're a bad guy. Well, yeah, you're a bad guy because they made a licensing system that now says that you're a bad guy if you don't have the license. You haven't done anything except for own a gun that the Constitution says you're allowed to own the gun. So now, because of the government creating a license, creating these things, and creating some stigma that if you carry a gun concealed, that you're somehow a bad guy, when you haven't done anything yet. And if you have done something, it doesn't matter if you had a license or not. Just like, I don't know, are you a fan of no gun zones? There's a sign that says no gun zone.
Absolutely.
So,
not.
But what's the difference between a sign that says no guns and a carry license? Both are supposed to limit one's rights.
One entirely limits the rights. The other one just says that we want to know about it, right? So I'm fully against, just to be clear, fully against states that don't have an open carry policy. You have the right to carry a gun wherever you go. I believe this wholeheartedly. But other people should know that you have that gun.
Why? It is nobody else's business.
Why are you hiding it?
Because it's my right to own a gun and conceal it. And keep somebody else. Because
nowhere in the Constitution does it say you have the right to keep and bear arms hidden.
No, just keep and bear arms.
Pop that bad boy on your hip, good to go.
I should be able to do whatever I want, concealed or unconcealed. I'm keeping and bearing arms.
So let's
So it also doesn't say only open carry that arm.
It doesn't say that either. We should have really made, if we could time travel, I'd go back and be like, all right, guys, you need to write this exact phrasing.
No, it's worded perfectly. It is worded vague enough to cover, we're trying to shoehorn other things. This is what anti-gun people love to do. They're trying to shoehorn other meaning into things. They're trying to ignore commas and redefine words to try to make it fit their narrative. And that's, I'm trying to read and understand Second Amendment as it's written. And I'm trying to fight for the freedoms that American people should be able to have without having to worry about if I'm getting pulled over and I don't have a license, that somehow now I'm instantly a bad guy.
In the story of the lady who has a stalker, isn't that what the story was? Something like that. She does have the right to carry a firearm. She just doesn't have the right to conceal it. And that's something that you have to, like, you keep saying.
But she might not. She might live in a state.
Well, that's her own fault. Can't. Move. Like,
no, that is not her own fault.
Okay, let's be honest. All states need to have open carry. That's the first issue. But we're not talking about open carry here. So I'm just going to assume she has the right to carry a gun.
No, we can't just assume that. We have to.
The Constitution gives you the right to have a gun.
We have to consider that. Because we live in a country where there's 20-some states that may not issue that personal license and may not have open carry. So this has to be considered. That these people may not just be able to get up and move so that they can protect themselves. They shouldn't have to.
Right. So every state should have open carry laws. Problem solved.
I get that, but that's not the world that we live
in. Okay. So we also don't live in a world where
concealed carry is... I'm going to break this bottle over the table and cut your jugular.
So lastly, right, you talked about how you started off with freedom.
Yes.
That was his first word.
It's my favorite word.
Freedom. Greg, if you don't have a driver's license, can you drive your car legally? The right to travel is part of the liberty of which the citizens cannot be deprived of without the due process of the law under the Fifth Amendment. You have the right to travel, Greg.
I don't remember. Yeah, what's the point of this? I don't remember what our point
is. So if you have the right to travel and they can license your ability to travel, right?
Because I can still travel.
How?
Horse and buggy, I don't know.
Oh, you can walk?
I can walk, I can ride a bike.
Yep. All that stuff kind of limits your ability to travel, doesn't it? Are we not limiting the ability to travel?
But I still have the freedom to.
Whereas, you have to get a license, right?
I have to get a license to drive a car.
You're going to fly in the plane without a driver's license?
But to be honest, I'm not for driver's license either. I think we should be able to drive.
Okay, we both agree on that. Never mind, we're going to move on.
All right. You said something earlier.
Okay.
That licensing gives knowledge to those who want to carry, right?
Gives them a basic knowledge and understanding.
I don't disagree. I would love to know that everybody can still carry a gun. Is a perfect citizen and knows exactly when deadly force can be used and knows that just because they're angry at somebody driving like an idiot that they can't pull a gun on. I agree with that. But what's the saying? The freedom, like
paid with good intentions,
allowing freedom.
Okay.
Comes with. It's, there's a saying. It's dangerous.
Better to have dangerous freedom, than.
Something like that. So
we're bad at this today.
There's a cost, for freedom.
Okay. Right?
So. We could also say, that somebody shouldn't be allowed to vote. Until they have the knowledge, perfect knowledge of everybody that they're voting for. And we absolutely know that that's not the case.
I wish that was sometimes, though.
They see a red or blue dot and they go vote for the favorite color.
Yeah, they do.
So saying that somebody can't carry until they know everything about it is just like saying somebody can't vote until they know everything about it.
Okay, yeah.
Right, so that's a problem I have with that. I agree. I would love to know that everybody that goes to vote has made a well-educated decision that they think is best for the country, and everybody that's caring has made a conscious effort to know all the laws and would make the right decision to keep themselves from jail or being dead.
Okay.
Right, but that's in a society that should be built around freedom. That's kind of the give and take of this. If we're gonna allow freedom, we have to also allow the possibility that people are gonna do stupid things.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd really like to know what our audience has to say about this. Do you think we should have concealed carry laws, or do you think we should have laws that just say that all guns are good all the time, anywhere, any place, anyhow? That's what I'd like to know.
Do you think that we should live in a society where people should be able to just conceal carry all the time? Or if they should go through a lesson.
Yeah.
Because I want to stab you.
I know. I did a pretty good job.
I know that you had a hard time. I know you had a hard time with this.
I really did.
I know Dusty doesn't actually believe.
Not at all. Stuff. Goodness gracious.
I know that was hard for him.
It was very difficult.
But you did do a good job.
Nice I tried, thanks. All right, so.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for watching. Leave us a comment below. We love you, and we'll see you next week. Cheers.
Dude, I'm sweating. Straight up sweating. I can smell my body odor. Because that was very difficult for me to do.
You did a good job.
Woo! Gotta like air my pits out or something. It's gonna stink in here. Something that I did learn when kind of researching this and thinking about it for the little while that we had is what really it comes down to is the belief, the core belief that either you should be responsible for your safety, your liberty, and it should be the, you know, you are in control of your destiny, or the system, like should the government take care of you? And the people who argue for gun rights or anti-gun rights and they want, you know, this like socialistic society, those people have this deep conceited thoughts that the government should be doing these things for you, and if the government says you're going to do something, you just do it. And the people who argue for freedom and, you know, gun rights and general freedom of speech and this kind of thing and capitalism, they have this belief that you are responsible for your own destiny. There's this deep, deep thought into one of those different realms. And that's kind of how I tried to put myself in this situation here. I was like, the government can help us. Yeah. And those words kind of tear a little, little scratch in my heart there.
Because there's, and I try really hard to be able to understand other someone else's thought process, even if I don't agree with it. Try to be able to, you know, be empathetic to it and try to think through how that person feels. And I get people having the fear of the unknown, fear of. I think the one thing that we can agree on, if we're on different aisles of this, we can agree that there are bad people and stupid people.
Yeah.
Both sides agree with that.
100%. Yes.
One side believes that people have the right to be stupid.
Yep.
And the other side wants to be saved from those people. And so what better
government.
Way to do that
yeah.
than through the government?
Exactly.
And the thing that always blows me away, because our country, it swings back and forth between right and left, right?
Yeah.
It always blows me away when one side gains power, that the people that are for that side are suddenly okay with anything that that side does.
Yeah, they're just like, we won.
I can hit snooze mm-hmm. for the next 4 years and everything's fine because
crazy.
But then when things swing the other way, suddenly everything that the system does is evil and wrong.
It's crazy.
And I think everybody's like that to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And it just blows me away that people that want the government to have total control still feel that way after their side leaves.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's just
I don't get it.
I don't understand how because there's just been a real time at least four year example of what happens when government doesn't do what you want it to
right.
do. So why would you continue to think that the government needs to be
and
the one in control?
And it happens like months. It doesn't even take months for these people to just like completely forget about the last 4 years of their life that they were all upset about the government's control not doing what they wanted.
Yeah, I just...
It blows me away.
I think every time that a Republican president gets in and all I do is hear the left complain mm-hmm. about the power that the government has... Like, you fought for that power.
This is your
fault. The last president, the entire time you fought for that government to have more power. Well, guess what? Every 4 years in this country, we get to have a swing of power.
Keep raking in the power.
Potentially.
Every 4 years.
That eventually, you give the government more and more power. Then somebody comes in that you don't like that now has all that power that you gave the government. It just always blows my mind.
That's probably going to go at the end of this thing.
Yeah, it's probably going.
But I like that rant. That was a good rant.
Yeah.
I liked it. Well... Give us a like, give us a subscribe, and give us a comment, because I really want to know what you think, and we're pretty passionate about this stuff.